was the what was we're discussing the learning, allocating time for learning, the proper allocation of time. Now, the basic premise behind everything is the fundamental principle of the Rambam says, and that is the lima, the kriya of Tainig and Menucha is really, the Rambam says, is worthless. Worthless, okay. Which means to say that when you really gain in learning, it is a process of great intensity. And it means that the person, you must be completely, the mind must be completely engaged, and it's a process which requires great effort. That's what the Rambam says that's what the reference in Pirkei Avos is. The Pirkei Avos says from Tzaira Agra. It means that a person must be able to really put himself into Limud fully and with all his energy. That's when a person gains in learning. Now, what I spoke about last time, as I said, that for that kind of learning, you need a minimum of 3 hours a day. Okay? For that kind of learning, a person needs a minimum of 3 hours a day in order to advance. If you don't have those 3 hours a day, you really are not going to get anywhere. I don't care if you sit back, you relax, you read, you buy a safer all day long, it does not mean anything. If you want to really advance learning, you've got to have those 3 hours of intense involvement. And you really should gauge yourself. You should really, make sure that you don't waste the time in those 3 hours. You should be really completely involved in intense learning. And less than 3 hours a day, you're not going to get too far. That's my estimation. And it is Rav David Leibowitz, it's a friend of Zechel, was a Gadol b'Yisrael, and he. He said the same thing, he gave the same share of time also. Now, in terms of a person beginning learning, so the difficulty in becoming a Lamdan is that you have to bring together a number of skills in order to become a Lamdan. There's no subject like learning. I mean, in other subjects, you don't have to learn how to read the text. And that itself is a whole intense language. And then after reading the text, then you have to learn how to extract the questions, the mechanical questions and answers, and just set them up in a logical way. That's why I mentioned Amar Shor. Amar Shor is an expert in that. It's important to have that kind of a perfection in learning, so Amar Shor is very important. But then after the Amar Shor comes the real learning, and that is where the person knows the mechanics of the text and he's able to extract the questions and the answers, and then you have to be able to understand it conceptually. That's the final form. Okay? So a person, in order to be able to be a Lamdan, has to have those three abilities. The abilities they demand a certain kind of sometimes there's an overlap between those two. For instance, if you're looking at a tesis, even if you have the mechanics of the questions and the answer, you have to be able to see when you look at a text, and this is important because there's a difference between other drachim and learning and the derech that we use here in the yeshiva. And that is that even if you have the mashor down pat, you have exactly the question of thesis and his answer, you understand the logics in terms of where that fits into the Gemara, and you understand the possibilities in interpreting his question, interpreting his answer. When you read it the first way, you're reading it descriptively. There's a descriptive thesis and there's a definitive thesis. So first you have to read it descriptively. That's the Marashah's. That's where Marashah comes. The Marashah doesn't go beyond the description and the exact translation and explanation of the text in descriptive terms. But then there's definitive terms. And how you read a thesis descriptively and definitively is two different things. Okay? So there, what happens is that when you get to the higher realm of definition and concept, you'll find that when you go back to the text many times, different words light up in the text than they did when you read it descriptively. Okay? So even though mechanistically you may have it correct, but once you transform the descriptive text into the definitive text, it's a different kind of a statement. It's a different kind of statement. That's what people who aren't familiar with the brisket derech, they will many times point to Tesis and say, well, Tesis doesn't say that. Tesis is not saying that. The reason why Tesis isn't saying that is because they're reading the Tesis descriptively. But if you read it definitively, the language means something different. The method, the Briskin method of analysis, changes the rendering of the text. And then you start to realize that Tesis only points to the definition. Many times what he does is just points to the definition, but he expects you to understand already what he's getting at. He's not going to explain everything, the Rishon is not going to explain everything put on a silver platter. What the Rishon does is he opens up the possibilities. You have to go dig beneath. And then you'll see, when you do that, you'll see how Tesis conforms to a higher system of analysis. And that is the difference. That's why the Briskin rejected many Achronim. Because in Achronim, you'll see in many Achronim, you cannot do that. And the moment you try to do that, it just doesn't work. And in Rishonim, it always works. Rishonim speak on a definitive plane, even though their language is descriptive. Because they assume that all you need is the proper information, and then you'll have the definition yourself. The Rishon only writes for people on his level. That's the style of the Rishon. But you'll notice that this is correct. So many people say, well, then how do you know that's true? Because the Rishon is writing descriptively. The way you know it's true is because every time you apply the definitive method, you'll see it will always work. It always will come out with a definition, and you'll see the sugya in a different light. So there, that's an important transition. That's like to be able to first read it descriptively, but you see, there must be accuracy in description. As a matter of fact, one of the things that Rav Leibowitz, who's a godly Israel, one of the things was he taught his Talmidim, he concentrated very much on Mashah and Pshat, you see. The reason was because he found that a lot of people that knew Chakiris, they're very good in the theoretical, but they couldn't read the text properly. They were very careless in reading the text. They take a look at a Tesis, the letter will come with a concept, and you take a look at the Tesis, it's not there. So it's not grounded properly in the previous step. So you have to be careful with the first step as well. You have to be able to go through a Marshaw to get the text of the Tesis from a logical point of view and from an exact descriptive point of view. But then you've got to move to the higher, to the next level. Now, the next level is amazingly, as I said before, the moment you start putting it into the definitive terms, you'll see it always works. It always works because of the fact that the Rishon always thinks definitively. That's the difference between the Rishon between, as I mentioned before, to many of them. But that point is extremely, extremely important. Extremely important. But as I mentioned before, Rav Leibowitz, what he tried to do was, he recognized a lot of people that could have chakiras in the room, but they couldn't read the text properly. That's bad. You must be careful in the text. You have to have both. Otherwise, you're just going to start projecting your own, svaras. This one might be good svaras. I'm not saying, but you can't say it's a taste of svaras. It could be many times you'll find you have a good svara. It'll be another Rishon svara, another Rishon other svara. If you're on a high level of conceptual thought, you're liable to hit another. But if it's not tasteless, you're not justified in imputing it to tasteless. So you have to be careful on that basic step. You must be very cautious. You make sure you have the pshat very well. Okay. Now, that's why I say it's a number of skills that come together in order to produce a lamed. That's why it takes so many years in yeshiva to become a lamed. But the important learning that you're going to do is the learning that, as I said before, the learning, the intense learning to end. That's, you must have 3 hours. If a person, if a person only had an hour a day to learn, given the fact that he really can't advance too much, let's say he is a lumber, but now he's in the world and he really doesn't have, and he doesn't have much time. I would say that he should spend this time, that hour, learning to end. Because if he spends the time learning the Inn, then whatever he gains is going to be of value, and his mind will keep the in-depth level of his thinking. If he spends the time learning Daf Yomi, his mind is going to be gone in a short time, and he'll just, if he has a very good memory, he'll gain Yedias and Shas. If he doesn't have a good memory, he'll just go in one ear out the other ear. But even if he gains Yedias and Shas, it's not going to help them insofar as the depth is concerned. And the important thing is always to maintain that in-depth kind of learning, which is rigorous. It requires a tremendous input of total concentration. And people who don't have that ability should start off slowly. You can simply just look at your watch and check in for a half hour, just try to concentrate on working out a taste. Plenty of material to concentrate on. There's no lack of material. So you take a complicated area and you work on it straight for a half hour. And you'll see that after a while they're able to concentrate for longer spans of time. And you should work it out to the point where you can do at least 3 hours. Beyond that depends on the individual. Beyond that amount of time depends on the individual. Some people can do more, some can't do more. But you should try to reach the point where you really can use your mind in an intense and subjected to intense concentration for a period of 3 hours. That's pretty good. You reach that point and you're really on a pretty high level. But then there is, of course, after that, you'll find one thing I want to tell you, that you'll find that this process, which will give you the ability to concentrate, of course, it's a new dimension. It's a different dimension of mental activity, one that is totally neglected in the world at large. You'll never find this type of thing in college. You don't know what it is. There's a dimension of the mind that you'll develop that other people just don't have, and many people don't even know it exists. It's something which anybody can develop, but you have to work on it. There is a tremendous reward in this process also. Because as you immerse yourself in this process, you'll find that the mind works in a strange way. And that is that after you put in that tremendous burst of that tremendous energy, you'll find that the mind starts taking off on its own after a while. And you'll see that that after a while it won't be that hard anymore, because the mind itself will just naturally learn how to concentrate. And then you'll find you're thinking on your own without even concentrating. And you realize that you're thinking for the last 20 minutes and concentrating without any effort. So after you master this method, you'll see the benefits of it are that the mind takes off on its own. And it'll be much less strenuous on your part, but the mind will still be working as actively. So there's a process that takes place that once that new dimension's opened up, the mind, so to speak, takes off on its own. And that's a tremendous benefit, because first of all, that's an extremely enjoyable experience. Your mind's just working on its own, it's effortless. It's really effortless. Because the workings of the mind per se are effortless. The workings of the emotions require great effort. So to push yourself into this area in order to get your mind working is what the effort is the effort that's involved. And that takes a lot of work. But once the mind starts working, you'll see after a while it works on its own, and it's basically effortless. And extremely enjoyable. I mean, after a while you'll see that the 3 hours a day don't have to be limited to 3 hours a day. You find your mind just attacks different areas in you, and you'll be thinking and concentrating without even trying, as you advance. But that without the input, it doesn't work. And Chazal really say it in two words: Yagaiti umatzasi. I worked and I found. See, I worked and found. The Vilna Gaon says, "Good travel." He says, "Why does it say Yagaiti umatzasi? I found." He says, "It should say you, when a person works, it's not in metzia, something you find with just a happenstance. But yagia, work, work usually is you work and then you get repaid. It doesn't say matzasi. It should say I worked and then I got repaid." But matzasi means like a found. Because once you get the mind activated through the working process, then it opens up all different channels. And then all of a sudden it works, the mind works on its own, and the ideas just fall in. The ideas fall in. It could be after intense concentration, but that's the way it works. Sometimes you've been working for 3 hours on a svara, and then all of a sudden you're sitting down to eat or something and an idea falls into your mind, where you walk down you walk in the street and something just hits you. But that's only that type of phenomena only take place if you have the input. Without the input, it's not going to work. You must have that input. The mind is strange thing. Nobody knows exactly how it works. But Chazal described it best. I mean, they described it precisely. That's the description. So that's the most important thing. Now, of course, part of those skills that are necessary are linguistic skills. Now, linguistics is a different thing. Linguistics is something which you must overcome. And if you don't overcome the linguistic problem, then all that we're talking about is worthless. So the linguistic problem you have to overcome by attacking it aggressively, but it's a different kind of attack. It's not. It's a different kind of work. I mean, that really is plain work. And the more you do, and the less somebody else does, the better off you're going to be. That you have to work on. Each person has to work on his own program, depending on where he's at. But it's important, extremely important, to cover block, cover ground. So be Mahavasedra. I don't know how many. You know, I mean, get the basic sources, the basic facts. And this I can only speak individually with each person, depending on what the level is. Some of you don't need it. Some of you already have mastered the language. But even if you master the language, I would say you must maintain a Bikiya Seva. You must maintain a Bikiya Seva. Even if it goes in one ear and out the other ear, it's important because of the fact that what goes through the mind, and you might not remember the Gemara, okay, but the processes of going through the Gemara, you're not going to forget. You may forget the particulars, but the mind has already recorded the method and the approach and how to and the linguistics, the mechanics you'll never forget. So therefore, if you go through 100 plot, you're not going to remember. If you don't have a great memory, you're not going to remember the 100 plot. But the method of reading and the textual skills of the game, you're not going to forget. It's important to always have a Seder and Bikiyas. I mean, it's extremely important to keep up a Seder and Bikiyas in order to First of all, to master the linguistics and the structure of the text, and secondly, to keep in, the person should always be involved in the Theosa Torah as well. I mean, you have to realize that you can't, as Rashi says in Sanhedrin, you can't expand in a vacuum. You have to have the material. And Bikiyas is, you come across certain Gemaras and you make note of them, and your deus broaden. One area of Shas always has to do, even if it's indirectly, with other areas. And it's extremely important, but you shouldn't neglect the Bikiyas. Bikiyas is very important. It's important for a person on a basic level, for sure. It's not only important there, it's indispensable. But even if you reach the point where you can make Galen, you shouldn't neglect the Bikiyas. You always have something. You always do. You shouldn't just learn like 10 blood a year. It's impossible. Less than 100 blood a year is really not going too well. If you're doing less than 100 blood a year, you should at least get in 100 blood a year. It's not that hard to do 100 blood a year. Okay? So, if you have that double program, or the program in terms of Bikiyas and Regilas, I would say instead of Bikiyas, I would call it Regilas. In my opinion, Daf Yomi is too much. A lot is too much. And Omid is much better. Omid is more realistic. Omid Yomi would be much better. Daf Yomi, I think, frankly, if they made an Omid Yomi, they'd be much better off than Daf Yomi. So blar is just too much to bite off one chunk. And omelet is much more realistic. Much more realistic. Of course, it depends on the blar and omelet also. But I'm just saying in a general rule. But if after the 3 hours, your main focus of the day should be the first, those 3 hours of mastering, that's where you really gain the intensive work of thinking. And then the rest of the day should be spent in acquisitive, what I would call acquisitive knowledge, acquiring, acquisitive knowledge, gaining facts, gaining ideas. And I would say have to try to work it out for everybody. So we have to have a system of priorities. Because if you have a whole day, you can do a lot of things. And I'll try to just give a scope of a whole day and try to give you the minimal. The minimal is, as I said, 3 hours. That you must have. Without that, you just don't have anything. Because your whole purpose is to gain thinking and increasing your abilities to analyze, analytical abilities. That's only with those 3 hours. After that, I would say you should have a program set up where you have your bakias. Okay, your bakias. If you would ask me, I would say on the average to go through an omid nicely. To go through an omid nicely. Again, it depends on your stage. If you're first starting, you're not going to be able to go through the omid with all the tastes. You're not going to be able to do that. So I would say a minimum of 2 hours. 2 hours in terms of the keys for the omid. Try to get as much as you can out of it. Okay? Try to get as much as you can out of it. In terms of Tanakh, you should also keep up. Tanakh, I mean, Nava says you're weak. If you go through, it's extremely important. With Rashi. And then I would say another important thing, if you could fit it in, but it's tough. I'm not saying this is something which I would say is optional. But it's not a bad idea to learn all Mishnayos also. Not a bad idea. Mishnayos is good. But if you can. I mean, it's an optional thing. Something optional. I think that Omer is most important. That Omer is most important. Mishnayos is not important. But you should also do Tanakh. Tanakh is important too. The problem with Tanakh mainly is that to unravel the, and let's say they asked the Brisker Rav, they said, how come these Jews are not studying Tanakh? So he answered beautiful. He says, because they don't understand it. Because it happens to be, in order to understand the Divine Nevi'im, you have to know philosophy. The Divine Nevi'im are not simple. So people in yeshivas, they have no background in Hashkafa really. And they look at the words of Navi. You know, it sounds like he's repeating himself again and again. This disaster is going to take place. That doesn't. You get bored. It seems like a waste of time. You see? The truth of the matter is there are very deep ideas in Tanakh. And I mean, I spent hours trying to unravel a few psukim. But every pasuk, everything is a new idea. No, but you have to know the method. I'm not telling you to do it at this point. The more knowledge you gain in Hashkafa, the more the different Nevi'im will be open to you. I mean, Tillim. Tillim is a deep sefer. Every parak, every kittle in Tillim is really is a different idea that he's being taught. You have to know his style, what he's trying to do. I mean, you need a little background there. But I still say there are certain parts of Tanakh that everyone should go through. Okay, and that is certainly the beginning from the Yoshua through Malachim Beis. I mean, that's something you should know. Yoshua through Malachim Beis is really know. At least that much. Small beds are fantastic, and you don't have to be a great philosopher to appreciate it. Because you see the events that were described in those areas are especially small off, and small beds especially. Small beds is really important. Small beds gives you insight into David HaMelech's character, and it's something which everyone can appreciate. You really gain from that. Small beds is really important, extremely important. But small beds. Malachim Beis, you should know. Malachim Beis is tough a little bit with the, it's a little bit historical, but you should have some knowledge of that too. And once you go through to the end of Malachim Beis, basically you've covered the historical period. At least you have some idea. If you wanted a little more, wouldn't be a bad idea to do Daniel Ezra Nechemia. Okay? Daniel Ezra Nechemia. If you had Daniel Ezra Nechemia and two Malachim Beis, then I think you'd have, at least you'd have some kind of a basic foundation in Torah and Ksuba. Okay? It's okay. That's basically the format. So you have Torah and Tzuvim, and you have the intensive learning, and then you have the learning for the kiyas. Now, if you could do that, if you see not that many hours in a day, really, not that many hours a day so far. You have 3 hours of intensive learning, 2 hours essentially of the kiyas. That's the basic thing. Now, beyond that, I would say halacha is extremely important. If you could set aside time, like a half hour or so, do a little Mishnah Berurah. Even if you do it every day, you do it twice a week, something, you should be in contact with halacha l'maisa. If it's Krishna, if it's Shabbos, I mean, it's important. You can't, there's certain things that you can't not have contact with. That's one of them, halacha. Halacha you should always be in contact with. Half hour of halacha, even if you did it, like I said, a minimum, twice a week, okay, at least you have contact. Mishnah Berurah is excellent. Mishnah Berurah is very good. It doesn't have to be Mishnah Berurah. It could be, you could present a good argument that instead of Mishnah Berurah, you should do the tour. Tour is really good. I mean, the reason why I say Mishnah Berurah is because it's a lot of the mice is more Mishnah Berurah. That's why I would say if you have more time, don't spend more time in Mishnah Berurah so much as I would spend some time in the tour. The tour is excellent. So your tour is the bridge between Shas and between Halacha L'maaseh. There's no one that does it as good as the tour. The tour brings down the basic. And if you read the tour, you get tremendous ideas in the Gemaras and the Rishonim, you know, L'maaseh. The tour is fantastic. So I would say that you, if you set aside a Seder on the tour, that would be very nice also. But twice a week it should be, twice a week at least. You should do Mishnah for half hour. So far you don't have that much time for it. It's 3 hours for the main, 2 hours for the kids, mandatory. And I'll say a half hour of Halacha L'maaseh twice a week. It's not that much. Now beyond that, I would say, of course you can increase the Siddurim themselves. Instead of learning 2 hours in the piece, you can learn a little longer. But you should work it out according to your own nature. Beyond this point. In other words, if you want to, you could have a Seder, you could set up Siddurim or a Seder in the Torah, for instance, in areas that you're interested in. That's important. See, beyond this mandatory hours, I would say what you should do is, there's such a thing as learning areas that you're interested in. Just even if it's a matter of just like, I wouldn't want to use the word browsing because I think it's contra learning. But I would say even as a matter of looking through, for instance, a shiloh, like a Maisha brings a question that you're interested in, follow your own interests after this. After this program, I would say you should follow your own interests. Like you're interested in a particular sugya, particular shiloh maybe, particular Maisha has a lot of shilohs that really catch your eye, that you really, you're interested in following up. Go through that. Take tshuva, go through the sources, at least have some understanding of what's going on and the final psak, you know what I mean? And this way you also gain ideas. There's another way of gaining ideas, and that's a pretty easy kind of learning. I'm not talking about the intense kind of learning, but at least it's also acquiring knowledge. Or as I mentioned before, the tour, Mechaschinuch is very good. There are so many, if a person has more time, he can round himself out by making siddharm in other areas as well. In other words, after this system, you can make a Seder Menchas Chinuch once a week. Very nice, it's a good idea to do. Now in Yechaso, Menchas Chinuch is excellent. Okay? Or in the tour, or just going through certain shuvas, certain areas that you're interested in, Halacha L'maisa. Use your own, if there's a mandatory system, which is really basically 5 hours, then I would say, or maybe I should say 5 hours and an hour a week with a Mishnah Berurah, I would say if you want to increase the Mishnah Berurah, you can increase it. Use your own judgment after this, okay? Maybe you want to go through a Ramban on the Chumash. You don't just want to do Chumash and Rashi, you want to go through a Ramban in a certain area, catches your eye. Let your natural curiosity, intellectual curiosity, guide you after this point. You see? I can give you many suggestions. I mean, like I said, Nukhas Chinuch is very good. Take a mitzvah that you're interested in. Sometimes a mitzvah is strange, you know, you don't really understand what it is. It catches your interest. You go through that. you'll see you'll be adding a lot of yiddias, a lot of yiddias, just by doing that. And also, it'll give your mind something to think about. Sometimes you might want to stop in the middle of one of these adventures, and you might want to concentrate on working out the sugya. It may become very interesting, very important to you. So then you'll be thrown into the other type of learning, which is a concentrated effort. Don't worry about crossing the bounds. You know what I mean? Learning is a free type of activity. So you might find an area you see, you really get to concentrate in this area, so you'll be applying yourself to the intense process of learning in the area of the learning that really is not mandatory, the optional kind of learning. Okay? So you have to allow, your inner mind and intuition to guide you beyond the formal. It shouldn't just be a formal kind of learning. You have to allow your own intuition to guide you beyond that point. The basic regimen is, as I said before, 3 and 2. Beyond that point, you should really be guided by your own intuition. There's plenty of areas you might want to look at. Any area you look into is worthwhile. Maybe an area in a stuff you want to go through that area. You know what I mean? Maybe a point in the Chovas Levavos, maybe a point in a Rambam somewhere, in Ofis Deis or whatever. Whatever you're going to do in the optional area is going to be something you're going to gain. But I would suggest that as much as you can to try to keep it to the hard halacha. I mean, as much as you can. And don't get lost in just browsing. You know what I mean? That isn't horrible either, because a lot of times you pick up some information that attracts you. But the more you keep it in line with the closer you keep it to the structured halacha, the more you're going to gain in these years. Now that's something, once you become a London already, then you allow your intuition to take you to various areas. Okay? So, yeah, I remember some of the fellows in Chavos Chaim one time went to there's a guttler who used to live in Pennsylvania. His name is escaping me now. So he was the bochim for the fellows in Chavos Chaim. He was a smicho, big doyen. I mean, really, it was tremendous lamas. So they came to his house. He was about to give him a bochim the other day, and the meal was a new shas, and they saw he was learning the Marna Vuvah. Yeah. So but you see, for him that was very good. You know, he's already reached a certain level, and he was interested in that. You know, that's already when once a person is a London, then he can follow his own interests, especially later in life. A person reaches a certain plateau, so then there are different areas that open up to him. But not for a young person. That's not something good. That's what the Rambam says, teal departis. It's very nice to walk in the garden, but he says you don't walk in the garden unless you have a full meal first. So the full meal, is what we're talking about. And then, of course, it's very enjoyable, but you can't have that enjoyment unless you have the method. That's why all these people that try to learn Kabbalah and these other areas they went into before they mastered learning, all met with disaster, total disaster. And just because everybody wants to be able to do that. Sure, of course, ultimately everybody would like to know all the underlying principles of Torah and philosophy, but you can never do that unless you master learning. Otherwise, just fool yourself. And the mind is just going to wind up with imagination and basically nonsense. Not only nonsense, but even worse, ideas that are negative Torah. So you shouldn't allow yourself the luxury at this time in your life to just pursue some philosophical areas that draw you. It's not the time for that. And don't get lost in that type of area. You want to take a break from the rigid analysis of Talmud. So learn Ramban. And Ibn Ezra, you can expand in different different areas. There should be areas that are close to the core of the system of Allah. Okay? Chazara is an important thing. The Gemara says, kala lomay vena chazara, kilo zareh vena kotza. But what chazara means exactly is not clear to most people. I would say there are two types of chazara, really. There's a chazara where you're doing chazara in order to remember, okay? And then there's a chazara that you're doing in order to advance, actually. You advance by retreating. And that's what the Gemara means. Gemara says, "Kol alomei b'vein achozer, kol zarev an akotzer." What it's referring to is not the chazara that you're doing in order to remember something. It's referring to a different kind of chazara. And that means that once you go through, a sugya, and you go through all the components of a sugya, then afterwards there is a review of the entire sugya, which really gives you the final view. That's what Gemara says. You don't reap the harvest unless you. That's the chazara that is most important. Okay. In terms of your bekiya seder, there's another kind of chazara, and that's the chazara from memory, but not necessarily from memory of the specifics of the text. That depends on your innate memory. You're not going to be able to do much about that. That you can't do much about. That's a given. Some people have better memory. Some people have worse memory. You cannot do anything about it. But you can make some money. I mean, there's different stuff. I'm not going to go through that. But what you should do is, for instance, if you're working on laning, you make a laning on an omid, the next day go over that omid again. First thing, go over it again. Because when you go over it again, you're going to, all those points that you've gained are going to register deeper in your mind. And the mechanics of how to analyze a blot in terms of the textual will be more embedded in your mind, and you won't forget that in the future. As I said, the material is not important. The main thing is the method. And the method, if you go over it, it's a good idea. It's a hard thing to do. Emotionally, it's a tough thing to do. You sit down, you want to go the next time. It's a tough thing. And I'm not saying, if you don't do it, it's not a horrible thing. I'm not going to make this a big burden. I'm not going to place that big burden on you. But if you want to do it really right, go over that last time again. Many times when there's another thing, another benefit of course, many times when you go over it, you'll see different points that you didn't see before. But that's already points which sometimes, you know, as I said, don't be so strict in this. I mean, let's say, for instance, you go over to the morning, you see different points, you see an interesting point, don't say, well, look, after 2 hours, I have to, you know, just forget about this point. I mean, there's a limit. Don't spend the whole day on it, but sometimes, you know, pursue it. So you have to be a chacham. The world says an aphorism which is correct. They say that the Vilna Gaon wasn't the Vilna Gaon because he had such a genius mind only, but he was a genius at how to become a Gaon. Okay, and that means that no plan that I can give you can substitute for your own intelligence. Or the person has to make these decisions as he goes along. Where is it worthwhile? Let's say, for instance, you're working in an area. So when do you give up? You know what I mean? You're working there. Now, you don't want to just go over to Rebbe and have him explain it to you if he knows it. You know what I mean? And yet you're not going to spend a year on it. So there has to be a point. There has to be a point where you say, look, that's it. I'm stopping here. If you're going to be a kind of a person that must get the answer, let's say you're working in the lane. So you're working, you're looking at the word. And I told you, the important thing is always to work. So you say, you look at the text, I can't figure it out, I need a gestro. Take a gestro, and you still can't figure it out. Okay? So this is on the most basic level. So now, what do you do? So you try to work as much as you can, and then when you can't do it, so then you'll have to either ask somebody, or else make requests on English Gemara, I mean, if that's the case. Alright? It's better for him, it's better to ask somebody. But the question is, how long do you work before you ask somebody? When do you give up? I can't give you an exact answer. You have to be rational about it. I mean, you have to realize that after a certain amount of time, there's a point of diminishing returns. And you're just going to be sitting there for hours and hours and days. I mean, I remember when I was a kid and I started to make a laning. So I was a youngster, And I insisted on doing it all myself. So I'd have the word, I'd look at the gesture. I wouldn't even let anybody help me look at the gesture. Sometimes find the roots would take me hours. Because I was a kid. I mean, I wasn't advanced. And then when I'd get the words, I would insist on working it out myself. Sometimes spend the whole day just to, you know, it was a waste of time. I mean, there's such a thing as working on it. But there's a point that's mentioned many times. I wouldn't enough. I got to get this myself. So it's an emotion. You know, you want to get everything yourself. But that emotion, when you get over, you realize that it's something which takes away from your advancing. So so you have to be careful. I mean, you have to be careful with it. You have to know when that's it. Enough is enough. That's it. I worked on the sugya enough times, and it's true. Sometimes you work on a sugya, you're about to give up, and you look at it one more time and get the answer. And you say to yourself, well, maybe I shouldn't quit so quickly. But it's a decision you have to make. There's no way that you could... learning, the bottom line is, learning is an adventure. It's always an adventure, it always will be an adventure. There's no such thing. It's not like chopping wood. You can chop for X amount of hours, you're going to have a certain pile of wood. It doesn't work that way. You can work on a sugya for hours and days and get nothing. And that's it. And then you can happen to sit down one morning, you just take a look, boom, everything opens up, you see the whole system. It's not a guarantee. That's why I told you that this guy, he had a sefer here, he would never be a Rosh Hashiva. They asked him, why? He's a godly soul. And he shot backwards and forward besides the fact that he was with an in-depth mind, unbelievable genius. And they offered him to be Rosh Hashiva many times. He says, I cannot be a Rosh Hashiva. He says, I cannot guarantee you a shiur at 11 o'clock. Can't. So sometimes I go work for days, I have nothing. So sometimes in the middle of the night, I have an idea. So now, if the yeshiva will accept me at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll get up and I'll say, I just worked out the yeshiva, you can come, everybody come and listen. Fine. And then the next day, you want to shoot at 11 o'clock, I'm not there, I can't figure it out, that's it. So learning is really, he's right. The principle is right. Learning is totally unpredictable. You never know in advance how it's going to work out, if it will work out. So that's part of the struggle with learning. You have to be able to work with such a kind of a thing. Anyone that wants to, that is looking for something that he has concrete results, learning is not going to happen. Learning is not going to happen. It doesn't work that way. You have to use your own intuition and your matter. And, you have to be a chacham. You have to be a chacham. Bottom line is you have to be a chacham. You have to know your own emotions. So some people have the emotion that they want it easy, so they want to quit right away. And some people have the other emotion that they'll never quit. Either emotion is better. I would say it's better to have the second emotion though. If you had a choice. Never to quit is still better. Because at least you're going to break through. If you quit, you're not going to get anywhere. So it's better to have that emotion. People put it on the side of that emotion. But still, you can waste a lot of time with that emotion though. That's what I'm saying. Learning is something which there's no real format. The format I'm giving you is just a basic kind of a thing. But the bottom line is you have to use your seichel. You have to use seichel and know when to stop and when to go and how to really expend your energies to the most profitable end. And that's something which no one can give you. I mean, it's in you. Okay? The reason why the Rishonim wrote, is a good question, the reason why the Rishonim wrote in the descriptive rather than definitive method is very simple. Because what Tosfos is trying to do is he's trying to guide you, put you on the proper path. To put you on the proper path, he has to take the various sugyas and show you logically what the correct approach is. Now, he doesn't want you. What he's doing is he's setting it up for you in terms of which you have a steer in the sugyas. Which sugya is the premise and which sugya is the variation. So Tosfos will show you, well, it must be that this is really the underlying premise in this sugya. That Gemara, you must say, means something else. He's trying to get the format straight. Because if you're on the wrong format, you're gone. That's the job of Tosfos, to set up the format. He's not, that's not his job. The Tosfos didn't feel that it's his job to give you the crisp definition. That's the end result of learning. But what he's trying to do is he's trying to set up the proper format so that you're guided properly through the sources. That's the work of the Pesach, to guide you through the sources properly. Okay? That's it. Pesach is not a school for, to teach you how to think abstractly. He assumes you know how to think abstractly. He assumes that. What he doesn't want to assume is that you shouldn't make a mistake. He wants to make sure you don't make a mistake in setting up in interpreting the sources. Because if you make a mistake there, you're going to wind up with wrong definitions. And every taste was kasha is Rabbeinu Tam wrote a letter. Rabbeinu Tam in his letter explains, he says, you know my method. My method is through question and answer, I show you what the proper definition of the sugya is. Whenever taste is a question, it means it's based on a definition. You define it this way, you're going to have this problem over there. Answer, you find it the other way. Right? It's a Tesis, Rabbeinu Tam himself wrote that in a letter. There's some people that in yeshivas, they think when Tesis is kasha, it's something they thought about. Like Tesis sitting in the line, thought, one second, how does this work out? I'll tell you the answer. He's writing the history of his mental activity. It's not what Tesis is doing. Tesis is not that egocentric to write a history of what fell into his mind when he was going to sort him up. What Tesis is doing is he's setting up a system. He's saying definition A, which would seem to be from this Gemara, doesn't work out because of the Gemara over there. So therefore he must reject that definition. But he gives you enough. He just wants to make sure you have the proper foundations. Tesis is trying to establish foundations. Okay? Abstract thought, he's not going to teach abstract thought. Either you know how to think abstractly, you don't know how to think abstractly. He can't help you in that area. That's the work of learning. Sometimes Tesis does, not always. Sometimes Tesis does feel that he should explain the concept. Sometimes. Not too often. Sometimes. But you have to always do it if you want to have an appreciation. That's the final appreciation of the whole the thought process of the Talmud. And that's the essence. Key. But that's something which a person can do on his level, depending on how abstract his mind is. And that's not the job of Tesis. That's the job of one. Let's talk about that. That you can't get unless you have a Rebbe. You can't, no sefer could ever do that. And besides, there's a general principle in the Rishonim, straight through, that you're not allowed to write down Torah Shabbat Pen more than you have to. That's why they were very cryptic, very concise, very, very terse, very brief. Because of the fact, the Siddur wasn't written until the 9th century, because it wasn't necessary to write it. With everything in writing, all kinds of nonsense. But the Rishonim were very careful, because Torah Shabbat Pen, the system of Torah Shabbat Pen, is even with all the writing, it's still Torah Shabbat Pen. So I mentioned that, but the fact is that no one can become a Lamed from any kind of book. It never happened. I don't care. The people who read the Talmud, these historians, these Bible scholars, I don't know what they're talking about. No Shreifas. It's kind of funny when you read the encyclopedias. They'll say, well, Rashi was a simpleton and Tosfos was a great genius. And Rashi was a nice, simple man. He tried to explain the text simply. And Tosfos is a big genius in learning now. Once he was a very complex, and the Zoroastrians, and they just don't know how to make any sense of it. So we'll see, it's obviously genius work. Even a scholar recognizes this kind of scholarship, I don't believe it. They're amazed at the scholarship of Tosfos. I don't understand the depth of the thought, the quality of thought of Tosfos. But Torah Shabbat Peh remains Torah Shabbat Peh, and the Baal HaTosfos knew it. That's why the Baal HaTosfos only write down, they can't teach you Torah Shabbat Peh. They can't teach you the final way to analyze, and you can't do that. That you have to have a Rebbe for. What they can do is show their arguments for how the fundamental structure of the sugya is going to appear. That's what the Rishonim do. Okay, that's what the Rishonim do. That's not their job to be your Rebbe. Rebbe, you have to have a personal Rebbe. It can only be done by that. Cannot do it from any text. Nobody became a Lamed from looking at a text. We wind up with all kinds of crazy ideas. Okay? So that's the reason why the Rishonim don't really bring out the beauty for crisp definitions. So you expect you're lumbing to do it. You're not lumbing. It's worthless because even to write something like that, if you're not lumbing, you're not going to even appreciate it. You're not going to know what it is. So that you need a personal ready for. That's Torah Shabbat Peh. Yeah, exactly. And now, I agree with the second question. And now is not the time to be involved in Kirov and these other things. that a person in this limited time in the yeshiva has to become a lama. And then whatever he'll do later will be multiplied tenfold. Whatever little tefillah he'll do now, he doesn't have enough to do here. You have to be a lama first, and then you can help others. You're not a lama because it's just a waste of time. You should not involve yourself at this point. An extensive tefillah, it doesn't mean you see somebody floundering, you shouldn't try to help them out. But happens a long time, but I'm just saying, you know, certain responsibility probably so, but that should not be your main thrust. The main thrust should be to make a lamed of yourself. You do that later. Once you're lamed, then the kiyuv will be valuable. You try to do it now, everybody that learned how to read a pasuk is going to start doing kiyuv work, you'll never get beyond that point. Okay. If a person stops learning the beyond, and they start learning in a manner of bikiyas, in a manner of Bikias, and I must emphasize and repeat what the Rav said. The Rav said today the style is Bikias. He says, if you don't know what you're talking about, what are you a bucky? So Bikias, what the world calls Bikias today, is not even Bikias. I mean, Bikias means at least, what Chazal meant by Bikias is that you understand what you're talking about. I mean, today people need to look at my room, basically, I mean, they have no idea what the fundamental problem in the sugya is at all. And it's just a waste of time on this. Except for the mechanics, although it's important. But if a person is a deep lumbin and he stops learning the Ian and he starts learning the Kias, within a few months his mind is going to start becoming dull.
The mind is
an unbelievable thing. Why do you see, you take a look in the world, you see people, especially as they age, you see a certain dullness of the mind, and they get older, they get a lot denser, and people, as a matter of fact, people think it has to do with old age. It doesn't have to do with old age, and the latest studies demonstrate that clearly, that the reason why people who are older become more, their minds become atrophy, the mind becomes atrophy, is not because of the aging process per se, it's because of years of neglect of the mental apparatus. See, in this life, you don't really need to use much of the mind. Most people do not use much of their mental abilities, because to get around through life doesn't demand much mind. And the activities that are necessary to get through life, even a businessman, even a physician, whatever a person does, the things that you do are not taxing on the intellect. They're not taxing on the intellect. So that's why when people, even a professor, I mean, once he has his field, then he starts giving questions, just repeats again and again and again. There's no real taxing of the intellect. And the moment you stop that process, then the mind starts becoming dull. And the sharpness is lost. And within a few months, you'd notice a difference. The person, within a few months, you'd notice that the mind is not as agile anymore at discerning the concepts of the differentiations. And then you'll just move along at the level that you're working at. Depends what you're into. But most people's lives are not really demanding at all in terms of the mind. It's very a fraction of their mental ability. You don't have to do, and that's why they become more and more dull as they age. It's years of neglect. It's not really the aging process per se. Because you see, Chachmei Yisrael, even in their latest years, are extremely extremely sharp. And the Moshe Feinstein of 90 years old was unbelievably brilliant. And there is such a thing as creativity. There is such a thing. Gemara talks about it. As a person has a thrust, each individual has a certain thrust of creativity, and that is in the youthful years. So the Gemara says that most people, that creativity only lasts, it starts waning when you get around 60. So it starts waning. But that's something which, that creativity process, it's like new breakthroughs, you know what I mean? That seems to be reduced. And it's not the same in everybody. The Rebbe kind of mentioned Rabbi Chaim. He said Rabbi Chaim just kept on gaining all his life. And most Gedolim, you find they reach a certain point and they express their creativity and make their breakthroughs. But the Gemara says a person should make his breakthroughs when he's young, so then when he's older he can chazer over the Torah that he developed. You see? Which means you don't lose your sharpness. You might not be able to produce the same kind of a shear that you did. I remember the Rav one time said that he used to give a yartzeit shear every year, which was a phenomenal shear. And over the years, I noticed it around it wasn't the same as he got older. He one time said, he says, I can't produce the shear I did years ago. I can't. So it's true. The mind loses that ability to make those breakthroughs, but it doesn't lose the other ability, which is to be discerning and the sharpness, and that the person doesn't lose. That's why Gedolei Yisrael, when they're older, you see, they may not be able to make those major breakthroughs, but the sharpness of the mind is always there, and in another sense, they're better than when they were younger, because they have all the knowledge from all those years. You see, so it's a different kind of they have a different kind of advantage when they're older. But there is such a thing as the creativity of youth. Creativity of youth is basically less, it starts waning when you approach around 60. Usually, approach around 60. But that's why, what you do in your younger years in yeshiva, to make you into a London, then that really is what sets you up to be able to be creative. Be able to be creative through those years. And then, of course, the person does spend his life in Torah. So then when he's older, and he can't produce like he used to produce, he has all the Torah that he produced all his life, to go over. He certainly is just as discerning. It doesn't mean he's dull. He doesn't become dull. He's just as discerning. But that creativity is a special kind of a thing. As I said, no one can explain it. It's how the mind works, you really don't know. But that process may dwindle, but not the knowledge itself, not the ability to look at the sources and to see it, through the mind's eye. That's always just as clear. I'm not sure it's just as clear at a Shiloh when he was older as when he was younger. The sharpness is always there. Okay? Chazal had simona. Because, as I said, it's like the Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos describes different kinds of minds. So some people have a memory, some people don't. Some people have depth also. The given that you have, you can't really, is a limited, every person has a built-in limitation in terms of his depth and in terms of his memory. And there's not too much you can do about it. So if anyone will tell you that you can increase your mental abilities, it's nonsense. You can learn how to think properly and use the given amount of insight that you have, you know, you can maximize its use, but you can never. Really, you have a different realm of thought. Like a type of thinker like a Rambam. It's a different quality. No matter how much a person learns, you're not gonna ever get there. It's a different quality. Take a look at Rav Chaim's insights. It's a different kind of quality. It's a different kind of mind. There's a certain, everybody has a built-in limitation. Memory, the limitation is more visible. It's more actual. Its action is more actual because in memory you can see. But in terms of depth of understanding, many times the reason why people don't have the depth of understanding is not because they don't have the ability, because they never developed it. There's a tremendous developmental process. So you don't really know what your level is until you've done it for a number of years, reached a certain plateau. But most people, I always say, that if a person has an average mind, a good mind, and he works his mind out through proper methodology, he will be far better than a genius that never worked his mind out. Far better. He'll be more accurate, deeper, will gain more knowledge, much greater insights. Genius itself doesn't really do much. Genius itself is just a potential. It's just a potential. And a person, there are people that have brilliant minds, brilliant IQs, Nothing becomes enough. Nothing. And the gift is just wasted. Just wasted. The person who has a good mind and works on it properly, proper methodology, will be far ahead of these people that are even the person that's much more gifted than them. It's true, sometimes that person can get a spurt and can see something the other person won't see. But it's rare. It's rare. The one that's going to be able to plow through areas of knowledge is the one that has the consistent, has developed his mind and knows how to consistently approach an area of knowledge. That's how the person, in terms of gaining knowledge, there is no substitute for proper methodology. No substitute. A person's proper methodology is way ahead of a mind that's superior to him in terms of like a IQ. Yes. But memory is more of a fixed thing. Memory is more of a fixed thing. Now Chazal worked out simonim. Simonim means in order to remember, they would make certain signs. Remember. I think it's a good idea, but I think that the signs that Chazal made were different signs than we need. The signs that Chazal made were because they didn't have anything written down, so they had to remember a sugya. So you see in the name of the sugya, they have these mnemonic devices. Those things we don't need anymore today, because everything's written down, and then you have the Gemara written down. So you know those kind of signs. A person should make kind of the type of signs that are good for his mind, for his type of mind. I mean, I my memory is not that great. What I try to do is I try to make certain kind of references, to remember certain points, certain areas. If I go from a sechta, I try to underline certain areas or to know when I want to look for something, I know how to be able to find it. Depends what you think. Every simonim are really dependent on your sphere of operation. So Chazal looked in their way. It's a different kind of a thing that they were trying to do than we're trying to do. They were really trying to keep the Masorah of the Torah Shabbat Peh. Today everything's written down, so it's a different kind of a thing. You have to use your intelligence again over here. You have to do the right kind of thing in your situation, not just imitate what Chazal did. But that's a good thing. A person should try to remember as much as he can. But again, I'm telling you, there's not much to do about it. It's basically memory is a given, and there's not too much you can do about it other than trying to devise some way. If you want to know, I want to remember this sugya. And there's different kinds of samar. Sometimes it's sugya and the sugya of others are there, and you'll remember it's in a certain peric. Maybe you want to bend over the dot, so you'll be able to find it easily, or underline it in faceless or whatever. That's what Chazal meant by samar. That's it. But I'm still telling you, the fact is, the memory you can't really do too much about. But this manazeh, we're fortunate in one thing. This manazeh, memory is not that important. I can't say that it's not a wonderful thing to be a Baki B'Shas. I mean, there's no substitute for that. You can't fool yourself. But a person can still learn a sugya beautifully, even though he doesn't have a great memory. Because you have all the Rishonim bring down all the pertinent sugyas. And you have the Achronim that are great for the source material. The sources are easy today, are readily available. So if a person knows how to think deeply, that's why the deep thinking is the most important thing today. Even though a guy doesn't have much bakiyas today, but if he knows how to think deeply so he can always look up anything he wants, he has to pask in a shiloh. The guy has no shas. But in today's world, it's pretty easy to look up all the sources. And you might miss it. I mean, it's possible. But if a person is a solid lumpy, he'll know how to go through any sugya, even though he doesn't have the key, so he'll know how to research it properly. And today, since you have an unbelievable amount of resource work. So today, memory is less important than it ever was in Klal Yisrael. That's why I say the important thing is to concentrate on Iyam. The important thing is to concentrate on Iyam, as long as I but again, I'm not saying you should never say it in Bekiyas. It's important. But the main kiyum is the Iyam. The Gemara says, what's the main thing of learning? The Gemara says that Agra the Shmaitz is Svara. The Gemara says, what a Chazal hold? Chazal hold, the whole purpose of learning is a Svara. That's the end. You don't have that. This is nothing. The Gemara says that somebody was Nifter, and he was a big bucket. So he asked one of them learned to say a Hespin on him. So I said, what should I say? Should I say a big basket full of Svara lost? They look down at a person who are bakiyas and didn't have any understanding. And the whole thing, I go to Shmaitz a slur. And Baruch Hashem, Bizman Hazer, would be very thankful for the fact that you don't have to have a photographic memory. You just master the method of analysis. Then you could learn and you could understand the Sugya fantastically. And you could really gain insight into Torah without a memory. So it's a tremendous thing. We have tremendous advantages living in our door, living in our generation. It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. Yes. There's no question about it that sleep is a psychological more than a physiological need. And they haven't found any reason for a person to sleep actually. You don't really rest any muscles any more than if you're just sitting on a chair and not using them. And sleep is definitely a psychological phenomenon. But they discovered, that if you deprive yourself of sleep, it can have very bad effects because of the psychic thing coming. So I would say, I see a person like Devon Legoyen slept 2 hours a night. And he slept 2 hours a day, and he slept in periods of half-hour intervals, four times a day. And it was plenty for him. But there's no doubt that a person that's on such a level, that is capable of so much sublimation, it means that his whole day is completely pleasurable. I mean, like it's just an endless enjoyment. A person like that doesn't really need much sleep. But sleep really is, reality becomes painful. So there's a certain amount of pain in reality. It doesn't mean that you don't have pleasure. The pleasure is there, but the pain is there. And after a while, the pain takes its toll. And it makes the person withdraw from reality and go into sleep. Now, depending on how your psyche is working, it might be more or less. But they say anywhere from 4 to 8 hours. Some people are fine with 4.5 hours. And it depends upon a lot of factors. I know personally, when things are running smoothly, I don't need as much sleep. When things are running not so smoothly. So sleep is definitely withdrawal from reality, from the pain of reality. It's something which you can control to a degree. I mean, you shouldn't sleep more than 8 hours a day. You're not going to cause yourself any harm by controlling yourself and not sleeping more than 8 hours a day. But you have to be careful because people, if you're going to start sleeping, if you need 8 hours a day, you start sleeping five, you're liable to find that after a while it's going to have a bad effect on you. Whereas you may be able to limit the 7 for a while. You have to see. But don't try any of these crazy programs where you're just going to cut out sleep. It's not going to work. You're just going to harm yourself. The important thing is to try to work, I always maintain this, that a person should try to work on studying his inner psyche also, and trying to understand himself. And it's an important part of Gemara calls it. Understand Tachbulos HaYetzer, which means understanding your inner emotions and being honest with your inner emotions. And the more you do that, I think you'll remove a lot of displeasure from everyday life, and you'll need less sleep. That's the way to do it. Okay, not by attacking sleep directly, but by gaining more insight into your own personality, which is a very important thing to do. That's the way to do that. Okay. I mean, that's true. I mean, there's certain practical things you could do that would help you. Exercise is a good thing. I say people exercise more so they need a little less sleep. Certain things are good, but that's because of the fact that when you're giving yourself a certain kind of release. You know, I mean, depends on a person. Some people, they hate exercise so much, they miss a bit more. The question is when you're going on a trip, should you take a safer along? Okay? My answer is like this. You're going to use the safer ticket. Otherwise, see people go on trips packing all kinds of swans. Get on a trip, don't open the safe. It's a waste of time. You should be honest with yourself also. I mean, be honest with yourself also. There's a certain amount of honesty. I mean, don't put yourself into like a mold. You're always a safer. You're being realistic. You have to enjoy yourself somehow. Enjoy yourself, so relax. I mean, So it's sometimes more important than taking along a safe on a trip, more important than taking along a safe on a trip is to go through certain information before you go on a trip, like a problem. Then when you're on a trip, you'll think about it. You know what I mean? That to me is more important than taking along a safe. And take along some ideas. I'm not saying you shouldn't take a safe. Sometimes you need a safer, you know, you want to have certain ideas in front of you, so you take it along. You know what I'm saying? I'm speaking in general. I'm speaking guys going on a trip for 6 months. But what you should do more important is to take a cigar along on a trip. That's more important. You'll find it's much more enjoyable. The trip is much more enjoyable. If you prepare yourself for the trip with certain ideas, and then when you go on the trip, you have something to think about. That, I think, is much more important. And just taking along the safer and being stuck with the safer, you have to leave the safer. I mean, it's like, usually this person just fooling himself and is not really interested in the safer, doesn't gain much knowledge. It becomes a kriya shall tainag menuch. That's not good. We don't want kriya shall tainag menuch. Okay.